roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What is up, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty on a Thursday here in Mountain's Edge, Las Vegas. Still the same. Can't wait to get back to the Mandalay Bay, even if it's just once a week. But how about this goes? It is what it is. All right. on today's show, there's lots to discuss. First of all, let's do it the proper way. I always tell you who the guest is, like, towards the end. I think I've forgotten two or three times. It's not the way it should be. Cub Swanson is going to join us, UFC featherweight, who's fighting Daniel Pineda, December 12th, UFC 256. He will be joining us. Ironically, Cub was on show number 6 back in 2007.
I thought it was 2.
No.
Oh.
Today is show 3,106. So 3,000 shows later, Cub's joining us. And we're also going to discuss a lot of the fight cards that are happening this weekend. First, we got Bellator tonight. It's Bellator 253. And we got a semifinal in the Featherweight Grand Prix, AJ McKee, Darian Caldwell at the top of the bill. Tomorrow, ONE Championship has a hybrid card. They got MMA and kickboxing. Also tomorrow night, because ONE Championship's tomorrow morning because of the time change. They're fighting in Singapore. But tomorrow night, Invicta FC 43, Kayla Harrison is going to dabble at 145. In fact, she should be making weight if she hasn't already around this time. And then they also got a vacant strawweight title as well in the main event. But, yeah, Kayla Harrison's in the co-main event. She's going to come over and fight at 145 pounds. And then, of course, the UFC, UFC 255. Folks, it is a pay-per-view. Now, Goz and I are not doing a watch-along for this pay-per-view, but we will be watching it for sure that day. So, two title fights, Mike Perry, Tim Means, Brandon Royval, Brandon Moreno, good stuff. Now, we also got some, you know, some news to discuss. The embeddeds have been dropping. I finally caught up and I saw all three of them. Mike Perry, wow, he did his media day yesterday. And he answered some tough questions. He didn't, no comment or anything like that. And sometimes you do get that, especially when it has to do with the legal side of, you know, your life, things that you have going on. And as you all know, he's got alleged domestic violence allegations brought to him by his ex-wife. He denies them all. We'll talk a little bit about that. And, you know, any other big news that pops up, like the other day as we were doing the show, Fabricio Werdum signed with PFL. So we will hit that refresh button on MMA Junkie. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, November 19th.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
So, Cub Swanson will be on at 9:20 a.m. Pacific, 12:20 p.m. Eastern. So, if you're watching it live, connecting the dots, look at your clock. Mountain Central time zones aren't important. That's why I don't mention them. Just kidding. But, yeah, so basically in about a little bit over 15 minutes, Goz, let's talk about tonight, Bellator 253 with AJ McKee and Darian Caldwell. That's a tremendous fight, man. That's a semifinal. The winner goes is in the finals. We're down to the final four.
I think of all the action that's going to go down this weekend, this one might be the one I'm most excited for, aside from Mike Perry and Tim Means, which I think is just going to be an absolute mayhem in the cage. But this one is an important fight, and I think it's going to say a lot about AJ McKee and his trajectory. And I mean, who doesn't like tournaments, you know? So this one is the big one for me.
It would be a tremendous upset. Well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, Darian Caldwell won their bantamweight title, NC2A wrestler, national champ. He's legit. He's been around the block, man. But again, you know, that's the 135-pound class. He always looked big for that class, so 145 looks like that would suit him. I never thought that he would be outsized. And let's recap real fast. They started off with 16 cats. AJ McKee defeated Georgie Karakanyan. Derek Campos defeated Daniel Strauss. Adam Borix, defeated Pat Curran. Darian Caldwell defeated Henry Corrales. Pitbull Frady, their actual undisputed champion, he defeated Juan Archuleta, who, by the way, since then has gone on to become the 135-pound champ. That was vacated by Kyoji Horiguchi, who had beaten Darian Caldwell in a back-to-back series between Ryzen and Bellator. Pedro Carvalho defeated Sam Cecilia. Emmanuel Sanchez defeated Taiwan Claxton. Daniel Weichel defeated Saul Rogers. So that was quite an opening round of 16. Continuing, Emmanuel Sanchez defeated Daniel Weichel last week. They're actually 1-1 in their career, but Sanchez gets the important one because now he's two fights away from a $1 million payday. He does have to go through Pitbull. I basically gave away what happened in the other fight. Pitbull Frady defeated Pedro Carvalho again last week. It was two quarterfinal matchups on the same card. Darian Caldwell beat Adam Borix. That's how he got to this dance here against AJ McKee. AJ McKee defeated Derek Campos. So we're in the final four. The winner gets $1 million. And whoever's fighting Pitbull, which in this case is Emmanuel Sanchez, is also challenging for the undisputed title. Beautifully done goes by Bellator, with the exception of the pandemic just ruined the momentum.
Yeah, that, and, you know, it would have been nice to have Aaron Pico there, but I understand why he wasn't there. And the pandemic is something that they could not have really planned for. So considering everything that came about, I think it's gone relatively smoothly and the matchups have been fun. But this particular one tonight is going to be real exciting. And if you can get a Pitbull McKee final, wow, that's going to be really interesting.
It will be. It'll be for the title. It'll be for $1 million and it'll be for the Featherweight Grand Prix at Bellator. Lots at stake. So I think we're all kind of hoping for that in a way. But, hey, like I said, Caldwell has won belts before. He's competed at high levels in other sports. Emmanuel Sanchez, no joke. He's been around. He's put in his time. I think my prediction of Aaron Pico becoming the Daniel Cormier of this Grand Prix, it's slowly disappearing. Now Bellator has a little bit of time to figure things out. I mean, we know this fight's going down. They made weight yesterday. So unless someone slips on a banana peel, we're good.
But that's the thing. Like, even if that does happen, the money involved is so much that I would think that a fighter would probably maybe roll the dice and fight injured, then pull out.
Yeah. Yeah. It would have to be something serious where if Bellator wanted to move on. I mean, if they had Pitbull McKee, but somebody had a serious injury, then I they may wait it out, man, because that might be like their fight of the century. You know, fight of the decade. I don't know. It would definitely be one of their bigger ones up there with like the Chandler and Alvarez fights, Mo and Rampage, or any of the big names that they've gotten to tangle over the years. But hey, let's give Caldwell his due. He fights tonight on CBS Sports. Check it out. We'll remind you of the times and all that stuff towards the end of the show. How about that? Tomorrow, we have one championship. Look, it's a hybrid card, but they exhausted a lot of their big name talent a few weeks ago when they had four title fights. I was looking at the card, and look, they have two kickboxing matches as the co-main and the main event, And then as you scroll down, I didn't really recognize too many of the names. There's a South Korean kid named Chang Min Yoon, who's undefeated. Bruno Pucci, also known as Angela Lee's better half. Well, no, Angela Lee's the better half. Also known as her significant other. We met him in studio. He's a cool cat. He's fighting. But, you know, there's just not too many recognizable names on this card. But look, if you want more MMA in your life, you got it right there. So check that out. And then, of course, at Invicta tomorrow night, Emily Ducati versus Montserrat Ruiz. They're fighting for the vacant title there at 115 pounds, the strawweight title. Kayla Harrison versus Courtney King in the co-main event. So big, big spotlight, I imagine, on those two fights. The other names look promising, 3-0, 2-1, 1-0, you know, but I think it's top heavy here.
Yeah, for sure. But, I mean, you get a chance to see there's an article today, I think, on MMA Junkie where she's talking about Kayla Harrison, that is, about Amanda Nunes and how she's the GOAT, but I'm chasing her. That's the girl I'm chasing. Mm-hmm. And Kayla Harrison has the pedigree to possibly do something like that. She would be trouble, I would say, for Amanda Nunes.
She was very respectful in the way she put it. You know, like, hey, we're – because they're teammates. They're teammates, and it sounds like they're friends. And it sounds like the only way they would fight is for the ultimate strap at 145 pounds, which at this point, I guess, would be the UFC, though Bellator does have, you know, a respectable 145-pound class. And Amanda Nunes is regarded as the GOAT and the number one fighter because the UFC's champ has beaten the Bellator champ. So I'm not wrong in saying that. Kayla Harrison's competed at lightweight, 155 pounds at PFL, but she's doing the 145-pound thing. She wants to catch Mandy, as they call her, before she retires. I don't know. I keep hearing Amanda Nunes is going to retire soon, but God, she hasn't slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
She could fight for 3 years. I mean, unless she's really that filthy rich and just is done with fighting, but she fucks people up, goes.
Even if you are, I mean, just having a kid, I would imagine that could be a great thing, but a scary thing too, because you got to provide, and you know, little by little, you start thinking about college and shit. One fight could maybe take care of college, right? It just depends if it's the right person.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so that gets us to Saturday, and of course, Saturday is UFC 255. That's why I mentioned the embedded. It's a proper pay-per-view. You have to pay to watch it. We're not doing a watch-along for this one, but, you know, we're pumped up. There's two titles at stake. Valentina Shevchenko defends against Jennifer Maia. Davison Figueroa, I call him Fig, he defends against Alex Perez. You also got Tim Means versus Mike Perry. Brandon Royval, excuse me, versus, I think I got a sneeze, versus Brandon Moreno. And that's a number one contender bout, in my opinion, though it's not on the pay-per-view. So you'll get to see it in case you want to skip the pay-per-view. I'm not encouraging people to do it. The UFC usually comes through. I mean, I got to say that. There's times where it's loaded with names and you feel like you want your money back. And then there's other times where you're like, who are these people? And the pay-per-view turns out to be great. It's that kind of a roll of the dice. But you never ask for all $64.95 back, right, Goes? I mean, even if you're shorted, you kind of go, wow, I probably would have paid 30 for it or whatever, but there is value to a UFC pay-per-view.
There is. And don't get it twisted. Like, there's times where there's a really good card and it just doesn't pan out too.
Yeah.
You know, that's happened a lot as well. So you just got to look at the overall product and how happy you are with it. And for the most part, I think everyone is pretty happy. But there are a couple fights like Moreno and Royval, Tim Means and Mike Perry. There's these fights that I think they're just almost impossible not to be fun. So it's definitely
Cavillo. They round out the main card on the pay-per-view, and then Shogun. You never know when one of these Pride guys, man, there's not many of them left. He fights Paul Craig, and a lot of people are picking Paul Craig in this one. So this could be Shogun's last fight. I mean, we may have seen it. We saw Anderson's last fight in the Octagon, apparently. I say apparently because you just never know. We thought we saw Habib retire from the sport altogether, but now Dana White saying that the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier fight, which now looks to be official, won't be for any form of a title, not an interim, not an undisputed. He says Habib's coming back, but that's just what he said. I haven't seen anything out of Habib. Have you?
I haven't. No, and I saw that news and I started to get excited. But the more and more I thought about it, I think I'm still – I would pick Connor to win that fight. How about you?
Against Poirier or against Khabib?
Against Poirier right now. Is there a line out for that yet?
I mean, look, he does hit hard, man. If he comes in shape, he doesn't really have to worry much about the ground game. Dustin's not easy to hit as he used to be. He boxes really, really well, and he boxes, you know, it's a lot of volume. Connor used to gas a little bit more, but, you know, I've seen him go the five rounds with Nate, and he went almost – no, he went – he got submitted in the fourth round against Khabib, but it looked basically like he had gotten broken. I remember after the third, which I believe that's the round he won, he didn't look tired, you know. So I don't know if we attribute that to Gassi. Of course, he said he had an injury. I just think Khabib just put him on the ground and his will was broken. Plus, that arm didn't even look to be under the chin early on, you know what I mean? I think he was just crushing his face. Mm-hmm. So who knows, man? I say if it goes five, Poirier has a good chance. If McGregor can land early, he's heavy-handed, man. You would not be in any way crazy to predict Conor McGregor early stoppage because he can crack.
That's the thing. And you know, Dustin, his defense has gotten better, but I just don't see him. I don't remember very many fights that he's been through where he's been able to avoid striking altogether. He takes his shots, and Conor hits really, really hard. So,
I mean, because, like, look at the way he flipped it on Max. You know what I mean? And Max is a volume striker as well. But, you know, he beat him up pretty good. And then he took some shots from Justin Gaethje. Justin Gaethje also hits very hard. Man, you know, MMA is a roll of the dice, bro. It's impossible to be correct on everything that can happen because so much can happen out there in the octagon. And then especially when they revealed to us 6 months down the road, oh, I was really hurt, or I had personal problems, I didn't have the best camp, this, that, whatever, worst camp, you know, worst weight cut ever. But if you're telling me the best Dustin and the best Connor are showing up, I might have to lean towards Connor early on with the fight ending within three rounds, just because he's precise and hits hard. But the longer it goes, the more I favor Dustin.
At the end of the day, did the UFC get it right? Was this the fight to make?
Well, they're both coming off big wins. And do you mean as far as like no title being involved or just the matchup itself?
Just everything. Everything involved in the title picture, these two guys, when they're doing it, all that. Did they get it all right?
I'm not the biggest fan of rematches, but they did do it a long time ago and at another weight class. So it's not bad. You know, what I don't like is if in their mind, because they don't really do official tournaments. They've done them, but they don't for the most part. But if in their mind their foursome has anything to do with Gaethje and Ferguson, then I would have preferred Poirier versus Ferguson and Gaethje versus McGregor. I think McGregor, Gaethje has a little bit of bad blood, and we haven't seen that matchup. And then the same goes for Poirier versus Ferguson. Whereas now we're left with, if that is some sort of a foursome, we have to watch rematches, and I don't want to watch rematches. And look, Michael Chandler, Ferguson really wanted him on December 12th. Chandler said, I can't do it, but I'll fight you in January. Ferguson said, no, we're moving on. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. That's a big mystery, you know. They seem to be all in on Khabib still coming back to fight a 30th fight, and we all know that Khabib doesn't really fight from, like, April-ish, you know, mid-April to about August. Those months are just off the books. So when would we see him? You know, when would we see the winner of Dustin and Connor? I imagine they're in the pole position. When would we see them fight Khabib?
You know, are you sad to see Ferguson and Chandler? Not, seems like it may not happen. Because I'm not. I actually think that's a really bad matchup for Michael Chandler. I really do. And
Chandler said it was the scariest out of all of them, right? Or the
I think it's the length and all that. Like, I think it would be problems for Michael. But the flip side is, I think Michael can give other guys a lot of problems that maybe he would be the underdog in fights. So it's just odd. But of all the people to introduce somebody in that you just gave a lot of money, I thought it was odd to pick Tony Ferguson in that fight, because that's a very, very dangerous fight.
Well, they just gave him a lot of money to fight nobody, so I think the UFC wants to get their money's worth. Yeah. But if Ferguson doesn't fight Chandler, who do these guys fight? I guess Chandler could fight Gaethje. I don't think they'll do Gaethje versus Ferguson, honestly, because I don't think they're doing an unofficial foursome with the ones I mentioned earlier, McGregor and Poirier. I just don't see them running that one back. It was a good fight, but Gaethje won convincingly. Mm-hmm. So maybe Gaethje versus Chandler. RDA is a player again, but he's already fought Tony. So do we want to see that one again? Probably not. I mean, we'll see them when it's necessary, but fresh matchups are better. And then you got to start involving these Makhachev guys for Fajeda, Gillespie's, you know, that they'll never be these names unless they get these types of fights.
Right.
They either get sat down by the star that they're fighting to move up, or they get put over. All right, going to be joining us here in 10 seconds. It's Cub Swanson, UFC featherweight, fighting at UFC 256 on December 12th versus Daniel Pineda. Hang with us, folks. We'll be right back.
The Counter. An NFL podcast from USA Today Sports. Featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Oh, man, we got hacked. We got the Ocean Spray guy. Hey, man, I really liked your video. That's awesome.
Yeah, people kept tagging me in that video, so I was like, all right, I got to do it. And I didn't want to shave my head just yet, so it took me a little bit of time. I was afraid I missed the boat, but love for it.
It was perfect. You nailed it. You have a very similar look. And there was another guy that I also thought could have maybe pulled it off is Vince Pichel. Same thing, you know, shaved head. Same kind of like tan. Yeah,
I look like him all the time too, so I get it.
How you doing, Cub?
I'm doing pretty good. Just getting ready for the next one, you know.
Hey, you're rocking the UFC gym gear. I saw that you and some of the boys were training in Costa Mesa. That's right. How's that going? I mean, that's probably about, 3 years old now that you and Bisping took that thing over?
Yeah, I think it's a little over 3 years. That's pretty much where I'm doing my whole camps nowadays. I did most of my last camp there, and I've been training there all year. We have a real unique setup at that gym where we're a big portion of our gym is outdoors, and so we're one of the only gyms in Orange County that's allowed to stay open. So we've been getting a kind of a lot of traffic through there. We've also been getting a lot of inspectors coming by to make sure we're doing everything, you know, to code, people wearing masks and stuff like that, as long as, because they have to check in indoors and then go to the outdoor area, and then they can take it off and work out. We've been very fortunate that we've been able to stay open.
Are you still doing anything with the training lab?
No, they're still friends of mine, but I'm not really training over there. I still train with Juan and TJ and everybody. I'm at the point where I like to have my group of friends. I don't really do the structured class. Everyone do this. I know what I need to work. I have my core group of guys that, hey, let's work this today. And I've been running my own camps for a long time, just, you know, jumping into, even when I was going out to Jackson's, you know, most of my camp I was doing on my own, and then going out there to for them to help me.
Mm-hmm. And going back to what you were saying about the gym, like, they were surprise visits. Like, how are they handling it that with businesses, like, you know, the whole indoor and outdoor part?
Okay. So we have, like, we took over a Mitsubishi dealership. So, like, the back area that where they used to pull the cars in and work on them, they have two covered ports, but the middle section is open. So we have bags on one of the ports that goes along the whole way. And then we have like a bunch of lifting equipment on the other side. And then down the middle is turf. So we run classes out there. We're doing less classes right now, group classes, but people are just kind of distance all throughout there. There'll be like 50 people out there. And everyone, you know, is able to work out. And then we were able to move our indoor equipment to the front. And we did like a chain link fence covered around the front area. And that's covered as well, but there's open air. And yeah, so we had to, you know, jump through a couple hoops with the city. But we did everything they asked, and we've been able to stay open the entire time.
That's genius. Who takes credit for this? You or Bisping?
Well, of course, Bisping's going to take credit, but, UFC Gym Corporate, manages the gym. So, you know, we get to show up and, you know, just say hi to people and you know, show our face and just work out. So it you know, we don't really have to do a whole lot.
Update us on the knee. I mean, I don't think you would have taken a fight booking without being 100%. So how has it felt? You know, this was, I think, the first really major injury. No disrespect to the hand stuff that happened a long time ago over and over that you have, you know, that you haven't had any problems with since then. But how are you feeling? How was it mentally to overcome something like that?
Well, it was just a whole nother animal. Breaking bones is 4 to 6 weeks. I got used to that, you know, no big deal. It'll heal quick, come right back. But knowing that this was going to be, you know, a year long process it was tough. You know, at like the 3-4 month mark, you're like, okay, man, when do I get to start doing jiu-jitsu and do all that? And you just got to really pull the reins and be smart. I think I was very fortunate to listen to a lot of people and have good people around. I had a good surgeon. I was in shape when I got the surgery. And I bounced back fairly quick. But it still has been this entire time. And as of right now, I can literally do everything that I could do before the surgery. Just it takes a little bit of icing and things like that sometimes. I don't know if I'll ever be 100%. I believe I will be, but you wouldn't notice. I feel like I'm moving just as fast and as I have in the last 10 years. So I'm feeling really good. I had a good team around me, like I said, and luckily I was able to push through this whole quarantine thing. There was a solid 6 months of me having to do my physical therapy and do all that stuff with the mask on, and it was tough, but I think it made me train really hard for this fight.
What about on the mental side, Tub? Coming back from the injury, do you remember a particular point where you said, today's the day I'm really going to test this, or today's the day that I can 100% prove that I feel like I could still do all this? Do you remember that day?
I did it in stages. So I started doing jiu-jitsu at a certain point and with the knee brace. And then at a certain point, I started saying, I'm not even like thinking about being in a bad position, you know, doing like a Barambolo with my leg tied up, you know, battling for a position and somebody trying to do a calf slice on me on that knee. And then just, you know, one day being able to take it off. I was helping Ortega train for the Korean Zombie. And there was a couple times where he, you know, kicked me pretty solid in that leg when I had all my weight on it. And it, you know, I took a solid shot, cause we were in the thick of sparring, and, that was like a test. And it's like, I gave it a couple days after that. Okay. This is good. So I had like a checklist and I did it one thing at a time. I never tried to push myself too hard. I was realistic. And I feel like I've passed all those tests. I was really trying to fight November 28th. Then the UFC told me that they had me booked for December 12th. And I was like, okay, a year to the day that I injured it, I could see that storyline. Okay. And it's two more extra weeks. So I was happy with that. I feel like it's perfect timing.
I want to ask you about the Swansons. I caught that, and I learned so much from watching you and your family interaction. But one thing that really stood out to me was everything that you're going through with your career, with your injury, it seems like it's easier because they're around. Like, and I don't want to call them a distraction, but I could just see your mind being a father, you know, just it just seemed like it would make maybe the sadness that would come with not being able to fight a little bit easier. Can you talk about the Swansons, where people can catch it, and just how you came about doing that? Because it was awesome.
Oh, thank you. I mean, you know, me and Kenda, we struggle. You know, we have three toddlers, and especially during this year, we haven't had a whole lot of help. My mom was helping out as much as she could. She got COVID. Like a bunch of people in my family, so she couldn't be around. But it's been a hard year for everyone. And we, you know, we just kind of wanted to share, how it's been for us. You know, Kenda's got her other job. She still works for the UFC. She hasn't been able to all this year. And I want her to go and be able to get out of the house and go, you know, create something. She's been working on this business for a long time. And I'm still chasing my dream. But at the same time, we made a commitment to, you know, have kids and, you know, give them a big chunk of us. So I wasn't going to keep pursuing fighting and not commit to that. So I say nowadays, you know, I was a full-time fighter before, but now I'm, you know, I'm part-time dad, part-time fighter. I do it both. I feel like I'm trying to be super dad now. I'm working out just as hard, but I'm in the thick of it, changing diapers and doing all that stuff. We share duties. Just that when I'm getting closer to the fight, she steps up a lot and really helps out, take a little bit more of the load, but, you know, we make a good team. As far as the show, the Swansons, we're putting it on our social media, mostly Instagram right now. But we just kind of wanted to show everybody, you know, we're normal people and we have struggles, and we wanted to show like how we're getting through this with three toddlers. You know, anybody that has toddlers knows that it's not an easy task, but we're just trying to enjoy the ride. We wanted to be able to record it so that we could look back on it and laugh about it and enjoy it. And then for us, we don't get to see all our family all the time. So they get to see it, and then our fans get a little insight of what we're going through.
Is King more of a handful than Royal and Saint combined?
King and Royal are definitely the most, they're the two handfuls. Usually, Royal kind of equals the twins together. She's quite a handful. And, if the twins are together, they can be calm. But as soon as we add her into the mix, it becomes chaos. So we have to separate them quite a bit. But you know, you got to understand, they've been in the house all year long. We've done a really good job of keeping everybody COVID free. And right now we have, you know, three more weeks. So we're not taking any risks, you know, no Thanksgiving, not introducing anybody new. So yeah, we're keeping it tight.
I wanted to ask you, we had Juan Archuleta on our show after he won his title. He said you were one of the guys that inspired him. How about him winning the title? How does he inspire you back?
Man, I was telling him in my last fight, I had him in my corner and I heard his voice more than anybody. Just because we push each other in the gym every day. Like, he lives down the street from me. And it's kind of a crazy circle. You know, Joe Daddy had a huge impact in my career and gave me an opportunity and introduced me to people. And then he introduced me to Juan, and I basically did the same thing for Juan. And we've just kind of came up as really good friends and training partners. Every time every time he has a fight coming up, that's, I get like a pass that this is like my training camp. Kenda's like, yeah, go. If Juan needs me, I'm there, you know? And he does the same for me. So when it's my camp, he's like, anything you need, I'll be there. If I say I gotta do this, he'll say, I'll pick you up and we'll go together. So we're both grinders. We work hard. And I just gotta say, being there for his title fight was just, you know, it was huge. It was an inspiration. I was just happy to be a part of it. And, you know, one of the cool things about helping other fighters reach their dreams is you get all the same emotions out of it without getting punched in the face. So it's pretty cool. And it gives me like a glimpse of life after fighting, of helping these other guys, you know, chase their dreams like I have.
And you don't have to do the weight cut either.
Exactly. I'll be there eating like, you're doing good. Keep it up.
Hey, man, the team's got some momentum. Ortega picked up a big win last month. TJ, of course, comes back. You know, he's held some belts as well. I guess, did you ever envision when you started? Because like you said, I remember you did some training in India, you know, and then Joe Daddy took you to Jackson Wink, and then the training lab, became a part of your life. Hell, I think I even remember you going to Mark Munoz's gym at one time. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But now this group that you guys have created in your own gym, Cub, that's a trip, man, just the way things have come full circle like that.
Yeah, when we moved out here to Orange County, Juan came from Victorville, and then I came from Palm Springs, and we had Georgie coming from Riverside. Our whole goal was like, look, man, we have a solid group of guys that love to work hard. We have a great time together. Let's just keep this core group of guys together. And whether we were training at the training lab or we go to HB Ultimate or we're at my gym or we meet up with Georgie somewhere in Riverside, like, we just stay in communication and we just meet up and we train hard. It's been awesome to have a good solid group of guys. And then one more thing about, I think a huge thing for me with, you know, Juan started training with Ortega a while back, and, you know, me and him, we never really got along after we fought. We had a little bit of tension, and I know that he wanted to kind of change as a fighter and evolve, and I needed to as well. So I finally swallowed my pride, and I offered him a gift, and we called it cool, and then we finally started training together. And I was like, man, hey, just, you want to be better, you gotta be the bigger man too. And so just little things like that through my career, as you grow up and you establish friendships, and the whole goal is for us to be better. So that's kind of like the way it is for all of us. And with TJ coming back, he's got something to prove. We're all gonna have a good 2021, I think.
Yeah. Can you follow up on, you said you offered him a gift. Did you mean like just, you know, you shook his hand, or did you really go, hey, man, a peace offering and give him something?
Yeah. So I had randomly, you know, sometimes you want to take care of your training partner. So I had randomly found this website that let you put any picture on a Johnny Walker bottle. So I took our poster of me and him facing off, and I made a couple bottles of Johnny Walker with me and his fight poster. Cool. And I had made them, and then I lost the fight. And then I didn't want to give them to my coaches because I kind of felt like they were worthless, that, like, to me at the time, because it's not as important as when you have a big win, you know? And I thought that fight was setting me back up for a title fight. So I had given one to my boxing coach, Antonio, for coming out, and because he had to come out last minute to help me instead of his brother Joel. And then I just had one, and it was just sitting there forever, and I didn't know what I was going to do with it. And so when me and Juan had talked about training with Ortega, he was like, yeah, just talk, man, you guys work it out. So I just thought that would be the easiest way. I signed it under my picture, and then I gave it to him, and I said, hey, man, I just thought you'd appreciate this more than I would. And ever since then, it's been good.
It's awesome, bro. That's a great story.
Yeah. Hey, Cub, I want to talk a little bit about something you brought up. When you brought up Juan, you talked about dreams. And I started thinking, I know you're focused on your opponent now, but how often are the dreams still the same? How often do you think about the belt, even things that can come later in your career, like Hall of Fame, you know, when people break down what you need to be, what you need to do to be there? How close do you think you are to something like that? Do you think about the belt? Do you think about Hall of Fame, these type of things still, or have things changed a little bit?
Yeah, I actually do. You know, I think Bisping was an inspiration to me. You know, because right when we decided to work together on this UFC gym, Costa Mesa, literally the same month he got that title fight, just short notice. And I remember me and Kami, my manager, we're partners in the gym. We were like, wow, what if he wins? This would be great for everyone, you know? And then when he won, we just looked at each other like, you know, what a stud. So just seeing that whole thing of him and his whole career and him winning the title, you know, so late in his career was an inspiration to me. So I just kind of, I don't really think about fighting for the belt. I just want to focus on my performances. I think that's what I really need to work on, because that's always been my ultimate goal, is have the best performances you can. That way, when I do retire down the road, I'll feel satisfied, knowing that I gave it my best. If I put myself in the opportunity to fight for a title, you know, that would be a dream come true. But at the end of the day, it's not my decision 100%. I've been right there, and it wasn't my decision. It was somebody else's. So I can't control that. I can only do my best. But if the opportunity comes, then I'll jump for it. As far as Hall of Fame, like, I don't know. I don't know what the criteria is. I think I've had a great career, and I've inspired a lot of people. I think people appreciate me for my hard work and just, you know, pushing through for so many years. Like LeBron, I'm on year 17. So I just... You know, if that happened, that would be crazy. But I don't know what I'd have to do to make that happen. I just got to focus on one fight at a time and try to be the best version of myself.
Before we started the interview, George mentioned that you were on the 7th or 6th episode of our show. And I started thinking about some of those days and some of our conversations back there. And I remember two of them. I remember one, you saying, I feel like eventually I'm going to be at 155. That'll happen further down the road in my career. And then I also, at the time, Uriah Faber was very big in the WBC. And then I remember you also saying, I feel like I just have this gut feeling that one day I'm going to fight him anyway. We're talking about going up in weight class and all that. Those two things, are they still things that seem like maybe could happen one day?
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I've been thinking a lot about, you know, because I'm not ranked right now, that was kind of freeing, actually. It was funny. I was actually talking to Dominic Cruz one day at the PI. We hadn't spoken a long time, and he was, like, asking me about fights and this and that. And I was like, I can only fight certain people because I was ranked. And he was like, tell him to unrank you. And I was like, what? I had never even thought of that. Like, what? Who would ask for that? But like at this point in my career, it was a little freeing, because I could fight anybody. It made me think about the possibilities of fighting at 35, fighting at 55. You know, there's fights that I've always thought would be great. Like at 55, a friend of mine, though, Anthony Pettis, at 35, Uriah Faber. You know, I could even fight Aldo at 35. So there's a lot of possibilities. I could see that at the later part of my career, they'd want to see some old school WC matchups. So I even wanted to bring up, you know, you keep making up these belts, the BMF belt and this and that. Why don't we bring back the WC belt? Who wants some?
Mm-hmm. I love it, man. And you know, what's funny is when I posted on social media about this being show 3106 and you were on show number 6, so 3,000 shows later, you know, And I posted a pic. We all look different, of course. I took the time to also jump on your Instagram. So I was seeing the Swansons. I was seeing the pics that you had posted. But on one of those, TJ's there standing next to you. And then I was looking at you guys, and I swear I was going to ghost stole my thunder a little bit, but I was going to ask you, would you ever do 135? But I could have sworn that you would probably give me Frank Mir face. Like, nah, I'm not doing that. But I guess Aldo did make it, you know, and yeah. I don't know. I guess there's something to this.
Well, the thing is I think Aldo was an inspiration for me on that. I really was in question if he would make it. And he's gotten some slack for it, I think. I think he looked great at 135 so far. I think that in the later rounds, we've been doing this a long time. So keeping a high pace, you're not going to be able to sustain a high pace. And he's fighting the cream of the crop, you know, and he's been doing this for so long. So I thought he looked great at 135. So it kind of just made me think about it. I've never tried to make it that far down. I feel like I have gotten a little bit smaller in the last couple years. Making 45 has actually gotten a little easier for me. So it just kind of opened up the idea of me possibly doing a 35 fight, possibly doing 55. I'm open to the ideas. I think the biggest thing at this point is, for one, I got this fight ahead of me. I'm trying to get some momentum and I've made a lot of changes in my style, brought some things back, introducing new things. So I'm just trying to get on rhythm of Cub 5.0. And then whatever happens after that, any just fun fights at 55 or 35 or 45, I think that's the biggest thing. I just want fights that are interesting to me.
Just two more quick ones. One, how often or have you even been golfing? I know that you were taking a liking to it and you actually got good at it.
Yeah, so it's been difficult. I've been dying to go golfing, and I've been two times since I hurt my knee. And I've actually done really well. It's funny. I feel like I've done well because I was wearing a knee brace, and I knew that, you know, I'm driving all that weight into that knee. So I wasn't using my driver. I was using a hybrid, just to tee off, and I was just playing like real smart game, and I was playing really well. So I would love to play more. This whole fighting thing gets in the way. I'm just playing. It's something that I want to do more. I still got it.
You know, you're not the best MMA fighter in golf. I might give you number two. I know you're not the best, but do you think you're the second best golfer out of all the MMA fighters?
I mean, possibly. I don't know. I never really keep score because I lose. It's funny. I've kept score a couple times, but the whole game, I just get a little bit kind of bored. I go out there to play to relax. So I'll play a couple holes where I'm really trying, and then a couple holes where I'm just enjoying being outdoors and not having stress. Because I feel like our job is so stressful that when I go out there, like I see these people stressing about their stroke and don't talk in my backswing. And I'm like, dude, come on. Like, you got to be able to like have people boo while you swing, like grow up, like it's not a big deal, you know? So I go out there to relax, but I feel like I still am pretty good. But I have been wanting to put on an MMA golf tournament. And I've had this idea for a while. I've even talked to people about it, but I would love to do a fun tournament that we could stream, but have like some fun rules in it, a lot of trash talking, because you got to do it more MMA style. We're not going to be all preppy and quiet. And it's like, no, you're allowed to heckle and you're allowed to talk crap and do side bets. You know, you want to make it interesting.
I could do a whole show on how much that gets on my tits. That golfers need that quiet. Same thing with tennis players when they're doing a serve or when they're driving or whatever. You got NBA players who shoot free throws, and people are waving balloons, their arms making noise. People on the line are talking to you. You got guys standing up there getting ready to swing at a baseball 100 miles an hour, where it could dip in with a nasty curve at 75 miles an hour, all kinds of noise, and all of a sudden golfers, how about even football? That's actually got these collisions, you know what I mean? And all of a sudden golfers want you to be quiet.
Yeah.
I got to drive. It's like, get the fuck out of here with that one. So thank you for saying that, Cub. Now the golfers got a problem with it. I'm going to say, fuck the Cubs once and I don't have to deal with them. But aren't you curious who the best golfer in MMA is?
I am. I am curious. Who are you going to say?
Patrick Cote is a scratch golfer. You don't want to invite him. Don't invite him to your event if it goes off. Don't invite him because he'll take it down. I don't know of any other. I guess I do know a few others that I've seen out there. I actually saw King Mo golfing once, but yeah.
I feel like me and TJ play about the same level. Let's see. I played with who else have I played with? I played with a bunch of guys.
Cormier's taking it up.
Yeah. Well, I thought you were gonna say Luke Rockhold because the people would always bring him up. I don't know how good he actually is, but I would imagine we're all roughly around the same level. I mean, I'll double bogeys, you know, but the other day when I first got back out, the first hole I eagled. It was like the first eagle I've had. I was like, oh, that was a nice start. And I never warm up. But like, to me, that's what the first three holes are for, is warming up. It's like, there's 18 holes. This is a lot to be playing, you know? So, yeah, I thought that was pretty good. I was able to eagle on the first hole.
Can I give Mark some friendly advice?
Sure.
Stay away from me and George on the mini golf course. Okay. That's where we don't play.
Well, maybe we should stream a mini golf competition between us. Bring a couple other people. One of these times I come out to Vegas. Do they have a mini golf course in Vegas?
I would assume. I don't think I've heard of one. Yeah, they have a really good one.
It's called the Rio, Kiss Mini Golf inside the Rio. But the Rio's closed. But I guess when it opens, I think they have one.
Yeah, I just have to wear a disguise because I don't know if it would be unfair, you know, if they knew it was really me there. So if I can pretend like I'm someone else, then maybe they'll let us do it.
He's right. Are you
banned from there? I wouldn't be surprised if some players were there.
We can't play golf for shit, but I know I'm one hell of a putter for sure. But yeah, we cannot play golf for shit. But that's one thing I'm not scared of is the green for sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm hit or miss on the green. I'm really good at my short game though. Anything from a pitching wedge down, I do pretty well. But what's always troubled me is like my 5 and 6 iron, for whatever reason, I seem to send those left and right. I'll usually pull up a hybrid and just hit a soft shot, and people are like, what, why are you using that? They get so pissed. It'll be like 130 yards and I'll just give it a nice little ding and it'll go on the green and they get super pissed. Like, you're not supposed to use that club. I'm like, it worked.
It works. Yeah. Hey, this is the last one I was going to ask because golf became like a 5-part question. Sorry about that. What I was going to ask you was, what is the, like in baseball, if you hit a home run off me and you stare and look at it and, you know, basically flip your bat, there's a good chance the next guy that comes up, I'm going to hit him. There's these unwritten rules in baseball. How is it in MMA that, you know, you've been around for 17 years? Do people in the gyms talk about, hey, someone's coming off a serious knee injury, let's test them there? You know, as far as like Pineda and your knee, what's like the talk about in MMA circles about that? And not necessarily like to re-injure it. I'm talking about just that it might be on your mind, so he might just want to tap it like Ortega did.
Well, I'm sure we fully expect that he will, you know. So that means, I think the unwritten rule would be if anyone thinks that you have any kind of weakness, they're going to go for it. So, I mean, I would say that would be the unwritten rule. So, yeah, we're fully prepared. I've been kicked in it plenty of times this camp. it's just fine. So if he does that, I'll be looking to, you know, punch him right in the face at the same time, so we can both take some pain.
All right, maybe I watched too much Karate Kid, but remember Bobby Brown in the semifinals when he ran up to Daniel LaRusso and just did that karate kick right at the knee, uh-huh. And everybody was booing. But yeah, you're right. This is as real as it gets, man. Anything goes.
Yeah, I mean, this is a dangerous game. If you feel like you have any edge on your opponent, you're gonna go for that. So I mean, I don't feel like anybody wouldn't do that. So yeah, I remember one time going back to King of the Cage. I don't know if you remember, there was a guy that in King of the Cage that looked like the logo. He was like this huge, you know, buff white guy with the mm-hmm. bald head. And they had gotten me a last minute replacement, and the guy didn't look like he was that tough. And when I went in there, the guy like checked me and made sure like the referees do, make sure you don't have anything under you or you don't have any grease on you, check your cup. And he said, "Hey, take it easy on this guy." And I looked at him like I was in the zone, you know, and I looked at him and I was thinking in my head, like, fuck no, you know, like, I don't know if this dude's just going to swing a wild punch and knock me out. And then I lost to this dude, you know. Yeah. So I just remember thinking like, no, like this dude's going to get my full wrath and he can give up whenever he wants. I can't risk taking it easy on somebody because I underestimate, you know, like you underestimate somebody like that, that's how you get a loss. So I don't think there's anyone in this game that tries to take it easy.
Yeah, looking back, it probably was a silly question. I know that mid-fight, you hear the coaches saying, "Hey, look, his eye's swelling up. Hit that eye," or you know, you guys are doing that. I just wasn't sure if somebody sits down and carves a game plan revolving around, "Hey, let's test them where we think he might have some sort of a weakness." But like in the end, you're right. It's probably a dumb question. Sorry about that.
No, it's all good. I'm sure people want to know. But yeah,
I mean, 3,100. I was bound to finally ask my first dumb one, you know. So it just so happened that it happened today.
All right.
Cub, thanks so much, man. Our chats are always a blessing, honestly. Seeing you from the early days in WEC and now still riding with you in the UFC. We really enjoy it. Thanks for being gracious with your time as always.
I can say the same about you guys from doing your show in your living room to, you know, you guys doing the show in Vegas for so many years. It's been awesome to watch you guys as well. So I appreciate you guys and I always appreciate you guys having me on.
Thank you, brother. All right. Enjoy your day and good luck with the rest of the camp. And we'll see you in Vegas in a few weeks.
All right. Appreciate it, guys.
Take care. There you have it, folks. Cub Swanson, UFC featherweight fighting Daniel Pineda, UFC 256 on December 12th. And, of course, one of the standouts that came over from WEC. Even when he says WEC goes, I just think of – do you just think of that real pitch, royal blue, hardcore royal blue that would captivate us on Thursday nights and Sunday nights, man. WEC cards were awesome.
They were never like, I'm not shitting you when I say I can't even remember a bad one. They were all really, really good. And even going to see them live here at the Hard Rock, just that little environment was fun. And then when they started to get bigger, it was still fun. But those shows back in the day were just a blast. And when you think about what they did for the UFC and the influx of talent that they brought in was, I mean, to this day, they're still battling.
Yeah. Hey, Goes, it's Thursday. You know what that means. Got to tighten up for the weekend. Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0. Let's get mowing. You want to tighten up, fellas, for the weekend, especially you single guys that are out there. Don't let that what stops you from getting laid. You don't want some chick going down there and getting a hair stuck in her teeth or anything like that, stopping midway. Come on, you've all been there. That's happened just because you got sloppy, right? You want to use the Lawnmower 3.0. Here it is. And, of course, it comes with a bunch of other products, especially this really handy carrying case where you can carry everything, all the products that Manscaped offers you in the lovely box that you can get. Goes, give them that info.
I'm definitely going to use that box or that carrying case this weekend because I think we might go back to California and you know, it's a pretty big case, so you can add more things to it. But I already have all my Manscaped stuff in there. But for those of you guys that are watching right now, for limited time only, subscribers get not one, but two free gifts. All right. You get the travel bag that George just held up and the patented high performance anti-chafing Manscaped boxers. Those are legit. It's 20% off, free shipping. And get this, all you got to do is type in Junkie Nation. That's the code. You know that at manscaped.com. And you get all these goodies we've been talking about. And I'm telling you, the people that have already told me it's legit.
Yeah, for sure. Give your testies the absolute besties. One more time, get 20% off and free shipping with the code JunkieNation at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code JunkieNation. I start every show by saying JunkieNation. Here we are. It's an easy one. JunkieNation is the code. Don't get bogged. Trim your hog with Manscaped. Now, goes. I do want to go just a little bit of overtime here because our hour is almost up.
You're not today.
It's just 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay.
We mentioned it, and I want to cover it. And that's, I want you all to check out. We did a follow up, article, obviously, and I thought it was conducted very well by Simon Simano, our managing editor. He point blank asked some questions to Mike Perry. About the ex-wife's denial he denied the ex-wife's domestic violence allegations, but I want you guys to check it out. There's an article there. Simon asked him about, the involvement of Perry's mom, the phone call itself, and, just some really, really good follow-up questions that I think you should all check out. A credit to Mike Perry, because I think a lot of athletes probably wouldn't have been as honest as he was. Mm-hmm. And he answered them all. And man, I've seen a lot of athletes go through this. And I think the longer you do put it off, and look, sometimes you're told by your counsel that you should just no comment, because that's something that could still play out. But, it also drags on longer. And I feel like he took it head on. And now going forward, he could probably say, hey, look, I answered these questions. Now I'm focused on my MMA career and, whatever needs to play out and needs to play out. And if he wants to say that at all, because he only put out one statement early on. But I like I say, it's on the front page. Check it out. It's a follow-up to, again, that story that broke over the summer.
Yeah, I think it's just best to confront things. And he seems like he's in a better place because he's just able to speak his mind.
I think so, too. I think it's something that'll just allow him to, for the week, it's in his rearview mirror, and he can focus on fighting Tim Means. I think even when we were breaking it down, maybe it was on the Triple G show that Goes and I do, on Patreon or – maybe it was just, chatter between me and the junkie guys pre or post spinning backlick. But we were talking about how, hey, could that be weighing on his mind, as it starts to add up. But instead, he took it on, and he answered some questions. And maybe it might be to some people's liking or not. I don't want to spoil it because I think you should all read it and see what your interpretation of it was. I think he called her that woman or that girl. He didn't call her by name. And I was thinking about that. I mean, maybe you with the psychology degree can tell me something I don't know, but I didn't know if that was just his way of saying that's the past. I don't even like to say her name. Like I say, there's probably way more legal minds than myself that can interpret his answers in a certain way. But it's something that broke on MMA Junkie over the summer. So for the guy that actually wrote the story, Simon Simano, for him to get the opportunity to ask him point blank 5 or 6 questions revolving around this, I just thought it was a good full circle, and with the athlete himself.
I think it's going to be a relief for Mike, to be honest. I think that'll take some pressure off of his shoulders, just getting asked right away, getting that out there. I think it'll help him. And if you watch Embedded, he seems like he's just chill. He's calm right now.
Yeah. It's going to be a great fight, Mike Perry against Tim Means. And don't forget, folks, a lot going on, starting with Bellator tonight on CBS Sports, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We also got one championship tomorrow morning, 8 Eastern, 5 p.m., 8 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Pacific on the BR Live app. Then you got on UFC Fight Pass on Friday night, Invicta FC 43. Kayla Harrison's in the house, folks. Saturday night, UFC 255 pay-per-view starts there, 10 Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. Prelims on ESPN, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then on ESPN Plus, you got other prelims, of course, that take you to 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. I know that's a lot. Just go to the schedule tab on MMA Junkie, and you'll see the lineups, the times, channels, everything. It's all there for you. All right, folks. I want to thank Cub Swanson for his time. What a lovely chat we had with him, huh, guys?
That was a fun one.
Yeah, it sure was. Great job booking him. And we'll be back, obviously, on Monday for MMA Junkie Radio. Thank you for your support all these years. Hey, look, I'm not trying to get any pat on the back for show number 3106. I just thought it was funny that he was on 06. 3,000 shows later, he's on 3106. But you all said some kind things when we reached 3,100 a few weeks ago. So thank you for that. And, of course, keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the week. We got you covered for all those events, culminating with UFC 255 on Saturday. Go out there and be a champion.